Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. I'm Konstantinos, your Chorus Call operator. Welcome, and thank you for joining Eurobank conference call to present and discuss the first quarter 2020 financial results. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Fokion Karavias, CEO. Mr. Karavias, you may now proceed.
Ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon, and welcome to the Eurobank first quarter 2020 results presentation. Together with me is our CFO, Haris Kokologiannis, and the Investor Relations team. I will proceed to an overview of recent developments before we present our first quarter results. Let me start from the pandemic overview, a global crisis that has affected all aspects of our lives. As shown on slide 5, it is fair to say that overall, our three core markets, Greece, Bulgaria and Cyprus, are among the least affected from the hygienic standpoint due to the early government measures. Lockdown is currently gradually relaxed and should be completely removed in June. In particular, travel and tourism should be partially restored during the summer period. For 2020, the economic impact will be severe. Visibility is still rather limited as the depth and duration of the crisis depends on the pandemic evolution, the consumer behavior, and the effect of policy measures, which together with liquidity support aim to smooth economic challenges. All current forecasts point to a deep recession in Greece, with the shape of the recovery most likely being an incomplete U, resulting at a level of economic output at the end of 2021, around 2% lower than pre-crisis. A similar pattern should most likely be the case for the economies of Cyprus and Bulgaria. The potential positive impact of the new generation EU proposal has not been included in these estimates yet. In such an environment, our key priorities have changed to first protect the health and safety of our employees, ensure business continuity, support our clients with payment moratoria, and especially businesses with new loans. Our employees have been at the center of our attention from the first moment, as almost immediately we enabled work at home for the majority of our people. However, all branches have remained open throughout the period, taking at the same time all protective measures for our staff and clients. We capitalized on the high availability of our digital channels, and clients have been highly responsive to transact electronically and engage remotely. At the same time, the central government has taken decisive measures towards digital. As such, it is evident that the digital transformation progress in the past 3 months is higher than that of the past few years, both at the banks and government level. We will further invest in digital transformation and exploit the lessons learned during the lockdown period in an effort to enhance productivity further. Supporting our customers has been our top priority. In Greece, from the early days of the outbreak, we initiated private moratoria for both households and businesses, as shown on slides 8 and 9. The demand for such programs is moderate so far, with more than 20% of corporate and household eligible clients opting in, and almost 50% of small businesses. In addition to moratoria, for outstanding mortgages, the specific terms of a state-sponsored subsidy program should be announced quite soon. In Bulgaria, Cyprus and Serbia, public payment moratoria have been legislated as shown on slide 10. Additionally, we have provided fresh liquidity by underwriting new loans to businesses. The months of March and April have been quite strong, with business loans balances growing by 0.7 billion euros. Demand remains quite strong as programs for interest subsidized and state-guaranteed new loans become available. And as a result, we expect loan balances to increase by 2 billion euros in 2020 from the previous year level. In parallel to the above, a high priority of this period has been to close the Cairo and FPS transactions with no value. On this point, all outstanding matters have been concluded. This week, the APS guarantee for Cairo SPV 1 and 2 was approved, and the Bank of Greece clearance for the FPS acquisition by doValue was granted. As such, the formal closing of the transactions will take place in the next few days. As a result, Eurobank will have the lowest NPE ratio in Greece at 15.6%, NPE stock at 6.1 billion euros, covered 60% by cash provisions as shown on slide 12. Let me now focus on the business update at slide 13. In the previous quarterly call, we presented a three-year plan prepared before the coronavirus outbreak. Although the situation remains highly volatile, our estimates for 2020 profitability, that is, core PPI and cost of risk, have been updated. Overall, our operating model is quite resilient, with core PPI expected to be only mildly affected by the pandemic in 2020, remaining roughly at par with our expectations prior to the lockdown measures. On loan provisions, visibility is still limited and our conviction is lower. Our best estimate for 2020 cost of risk ranges between 140 to 160 basis points, or more than 60% higher than the previously expected level of 90 basis points. This estimate is based on a macro scenario that assumes cumulative GDP reduction of 2.5% between 2020 and 2021, which is in line with an EU Commission forecasting decline of 1.8% for the same period. So, in summary, after a period of turmoil, economic activity appears to start normalizing, and our de-risked balance sheet post the Cairo transaction will be the base for above par profitability. The combination of resilient PPI and the completion of our NPE reduction plan makes us stronger to deal with the current serious challenges. At this point, I would like to ask our CFO, Mr. Harris Kokologiannis, to present our first quarter results before opening the Q&A session.
Thank you, Fokio. Let's now provide some more insight on the first quarter results and the outlook of the year. Starting from funding and liquidity on slide 20. As shown on the left part of the page, the bank is making already use of a total of 7.3 billion euro LTRO and TLTRO. This translates to a benefit on our net interest income for the next 3 years of approximately 130 million euro, the major part of which should be recognized in 2021. At the right part of the page, group deposits increased in the first quarter by 500 million euro, coming in full from Greece. Net loans to deposit ratio remained stable in the first quarter at 83%. Moving on page 23 and on the lending growth, during the first quarter, performing loans increased by 500 million euro due to the Greek corporate portfolio. The strong demand should continue for the rest of the year as programs for interest-subsidized and state-guaranteeing loans become available. As a result, a further 1.5 billion euro of loan balances increase is expected. On page 26, net interest income for the group decreased quarter on quarter by 8 million euro or by 2.1% to 339 million. Half of this decrease is due to the day's effect, while lower income from NPV unwinding Greek corporate recoveries and international activities had also a negative contribution. These drivers were partly offset by lower funding cost due to repos volume and customer deposits rates. On a year-on-year basis, net interest income is lower by 0.9%. On page 27, net commission income increased year-on-year by 40%, mainly due to the merger with Grivalia, capital markets and bancassurance fees. Compared with the previous quarter, lending, network and bancassurance fees were lower due to seasonality and the lockdown in the second half of March. Higher capital market fees relate with investment banking and treasury sales activity, as well as with higher equity brokerage fees. On page 28, operating expenses quarter on quarter are lower by 17 million euro or by 7% due to lower personnel, administrative and advertising costs. On a year-on-year basis, costs are higher by 1.7% due to the merger with Grivalia and the acquisition of Piraeus Bulgaria. In Greece, costs are lower by 2.8% and specifically staff costs by 8.8%, driven by the decrease of staff by approximately 500 people. Further on pre-provision income and on page 16. On the top left of the page, core PPI is stable compared to the previous quarter at 212 million euro, as a result of lower operating expenses, which offset lower NII and commission income. On a year-on-year basis, core PPI is higher by 10.3%. Pre-provision income decreased to 214 million euro due to lower other income. Moving on asset quality and on page 17. As shown on the top left of the page, NPE formation was almost flat in the quarter, as the positive formation of the business portfolio was offset by the good performance of household. NPE ratio remained stable in the first quarter at 29%, while pro forma with Cairo completion, it decreases to 15.6%. Cost of risk over net loans amounted in the first quarter to 1.3% and loan provisions to 126 million euro. Finally, on this page, provision coverage at the end of March amounted to 55.6%, while pro forma with Cairo completion, it increases to circa 60%. Moving on the capital position and on page 18. In the first quarter, the fully loaded CET1 ratio decreased to 13.7% as a result of investment securities marked to market, mainly corporate and foreign sovereign, and the increase of RWAs by 1.6 billion euro, mainly related with balance sheet growth, but also with higher market risk due to market volatility. The above have been partly offset by the quarterly profitability of circa 60 million euro. Total capital ratio amounted at the end of March to 17.8%, including the IFRS 9 transition impact for the full year 2020. Moving on page 19, our capital position pro forma with Cairo and FPS transactions is shown. The impact from the transactions amount to 340 basis points, which is circa 30 basis points lower than our previous estimate. The difference is mainly due to the risk weighting of Cairo senior notes, now at 0%, and the crystallization of Cairo loss at 1.57 billion euro, or 25 million lower following the rating completion for SPV3. As a result, total capital ratio pro forma with Cairo and FPS amounts to 14.4%. Following the closing of Cairo and FPS in the next few days, the impact of the transactions to the financials of the bank will be reflected in the second quarter. Before we open the floor to your questions, I would like to give you more details on the 2020 outlook. On page 13, we present the evolution of the main P&L drivers in 2020 pre- and post-COVID as a percentage of 2019 core PPI. Furthermore, the net interest income, fees, and operating expenses 2020 estimates compared to 2019 are as follows. Net interest income is expected to decline by a low single-digit rate in 2020 versus 2019. This compares to a mid-single-digit decline previously expected and reflects a stronger loan growth, higher bonds income, reduced funding costs, and higher TLTRO utilization. On the other hand, we still expect fees and commissions income to increase year-on-year, but at a low single-digit pace versus a high teens percentage previously expected. This is due to the impact of the lockdown and the lower client activity in the region for the rest of the year. Regarding operating expenses, we are intensifying our efforts to reduce them both in Greece and in core countries. As a result, we expect group operating expenses to decrease by a low single-digit rate in 2020 versus 2019, instead of a low single-digit growth previously. Overall, and based on the available data, our core pre-provision income is expected to be only slightly affected by the pandemic in 2020 and amount to circa 840 million euro compared to 860 million previously. This is at a par with 2019 levels. As regards cost of risk, our best estimate ranges between 140 and 160 basis points, or more than 60% higher from the previously expected level of 90 basis points. This estimate is based on a macroeconomic scenario that assumes cumulative GDP reduction of 2.5% in 2020 and 2021, which is in line with an EU Commission forecast decline of 1.8% for the same period. This completes my presentation, and we may now open the floor for your questions.
The first question is from the line of Florian Jonas with Axia Ventures. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon, guys. Thanks for the presentation. First of all, congratulations for the conclusion of Cairo, remarkable transaction. Now, a few small questions from my side. First of all, Harris, could you please expand a bit on the difference on the Cairo hit? Previously, the expectation was for 1590, and then it closed at 1567. So if you could just expand a bit on what drove that. And if you're already in a position to expand a bit on the servicing contract, if there was any changes to the agreement with the value as well. Secondly, on capital, am I right to assume that there was a small decrease in your capital requirement from 11.5 to 11%, as you show in slide 19? And then thirdly, still on capital, I was wondering what is your expectation for the CRR changes on your capital? What kind of a basis point benefit you expect to benefit if this goes ahead? Thanks.
Thank you for all. Coming on the transaction, let me again summarize the timeline to be clear on that, and then we'll come on the impact of the transaction regarding your points. On the timeline, we have completed the hive down as at the end of March. On Cairo, we have received DBRS for all three SPVs, SPV 1, 2, and 3. We have applied for Heracles for all SPVs again, and we have received approval for SPV 1 and 2, while for SPV 3, we expect approval soon, within the month. As of the first quarter, we have also received approval for SRT from SSM. Now, these are the major milestones on Cairo in 2020 year to date. On FPS, We have received the approval from Antitrust Committee. We have received the approval from Bank of Greece regarding the acquisition of FPS of from Dovalu, and also the carve-out has been completed in the previous 2 months. So on Monday we have our final board to approve the final terms of the transaction, and we expect closing with Dovalu on Cairo and FPS within next few days. The final milestone is the distribution of part of mezzanine and junior to shareholders, as it was our initial plan, within the third quarter. So as a result, we are going to decrease our NPEs and account for the loss of Cairo in the second quarter. Now, regarding the impact, first of all, we should state that there is no any change in the total consideration. And on slide 19, we show the impact of the transaction on the capital, where, as I mentioned, it is actually slightly lower than what it was shown in the previous quarterly call. More specifically, compared to what we presented in March, there is a small decrease of loss from 1,590,000,000 to 1,567,000,000, as we now have the exact tranching of SPV3 as well, following the rating completion by DBRS. And furthermore, compared to March's presentation, senior tranche will be weighted at 0% and not 25%, that was our assumption at that time. So the above are giving us an overall saving in capital of circa 30 basis points versus our previous estimate. Apart from the above, there are some slight modifications on SLA modalities, which we are going to communicate in the formal closing. Now, regarding the capital requirement, on that we have not any change. It remains as it used to be. What the ECB has stipulated is that temporarily all European banks may make full use of all available buffers in order to withstand the stress and provide ample liquidity to the economy. So the total capital requirement without all this buffer amounts to 11%. This does not imply again that our news rep is such, but this is the level without the buffers that they may be used to address the COVID outbreak. Coming to your last question on the proposed CRR amendments, we are talking about mainly a flexibility on IFRS 9 without any major impact from a first reading. And then we are talking about an early application of ability not to deduct from CET1 prudently valued software assets, and an early application associated with an RWA discount on SME loans. So mainly the two latest issues, the SME discount factor and the software, may reach a positive impact of up to 65 basis points, which have not been reflected in this presentation. But still, we should wait from the technical standards from EBA in order to, let's say, conclude on the final impact.
Okay, thank you. And just a follow-up on cost of risk. I mean, just trying to understand your strategy behind not going for a one-off charge in Q1, but keeping an elevated cost of risk guidance for the rest of the year. I think the difference between the the difference in euros to your extra elevator cost risk is something like 250 million euros, which you could have booked as well in Q1. So just trying to understand why you decided to go for the impact over the next three quarters instead of taking a higher impairment in Q1, similar to the other banks, not only in Greece, but in Europe as well.
Actually, different banks have decided to adopt a different strategy on that. As you said very correctly, some banks decided to book in the first quarter the full effect. Others have decided to smoothen this over the course of the year. We decided to adopt the latter, at least at the moment, because we would like to have more visibility about how the cost of risk will evolve over time. And based on the input that we may have during the second or third quarter, we may adjust our strategy accordingly.
Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Bayraktari Agiligi with Autonomous Research. Please go ahead.
Hello. Thanks for taking my questions. Three questions on my side, please. First of all, on your NPEs, which haven't moved much, and you show that NPE formation is almost zero this quarter. I was just wondering whether there is a reason why you didn't take any actions in the first quarter of the year. We've seen two of your peers that reported yesterday, they still had negative formation despite the lockdown which started in March. So I was just wondering whether that was a decision from management not to do any auctions, liquidations, write-offs in light of the Cairo transaction, or whether you have seen any underlying trends with regards to formation. And if you could also give us your expectation with regards to how the book is going to progress in the next few quarters based on the discussions that you have with corporates and households regarding restructuring of bad loans, etc. My second question has to do with the increase in fees. I appreciate that you've got the Grivalia effect in the first quarter of this year, which was not in the first quarter of last year, but still, that would imply that the underlying fees ex Grivalia are not massively down. Isn't that a bit too optimistic? One of your peers guided for fees in Greece down by double-digit percentage this year. And last question on NII. The increase on performing loans by around 2 billion this year, which you're guiding for, should we expect the interest rate on these loans to be lower than the interest rate on the front book at the moment because they will be supported by the government? Thank you very much.
Okay, Angeliki, thank you for your questions. I will take the first one. And then Harris will comment about fee and commission income and net interest income. So in terms of the NPE formation in the first quarter, let me clarify that there was no management action. It was the numbers that we observed. The formation was flat for the quarter. The second part of March, which is the important month, the important part for the month, was definitely affected by the lockdown. And as you can see on slide 31, there was a positive corporate formation of about 80 million euros, which includes three relatively large corporate cases classified as NPEs. Now, there is a technical issue here. Two of them are part of the Cairo securitization. Therefore, they're going to be off our books in the second quarter. Now, moving into the second quarter, we still expect to see a rather flattish formation. Looking ahead, due to the existence of the moratoria, we should have a clear picture about the client's longer-term ability to service their loans, either in the fourth quarter of 2020 or in the first quarter of 2021. However, we should keep in mind that the impact of the recession, which definitely will weigh negatively on formation going forward, to some extent will be balanced by a number of credit-positive items as follows. I mentioned in my introductory speech that we expect the government to announce the exact terms of a state-sponsored subsidy program for mortgages. The exact terms should be clarified over the next couple of weeks, but we know already that the subsidy duration would be for 9 months. That means from the third quarter of 2020 until the end of the first quarter of 2021, the amount of subsidy will decrease gradually per quarter. Okay, obviously, the amount of subsidy will also depend on clients' income and total wealth. But overall, this is a program that will support the mortgage portfolios. It is also credit positive that, as you can see on pages 8 and 9, the percentage of customers we have opt-in for the moratoria that we have announced so far is quite lower than initially expected. In our view, this confirms that the payment culture has not deteriorated this time. It is also credit positive, the availability of the 7 billion state guarantee scheme that is going to be launched next week for new lending to businesses, to corporates and SMEs. This is also going to be positive for the asset quality of this segment. So overall, I think it is, in our view, early to draw any definite conclusions about the pace of NPE formation for the rest of 2020, as the overall scale of the deterioration in asset quality will largely depend on the depth and the length of the recession from one side, but on the other side, from the success of the several support programs.
Now, on your second and third question, Angeliki, as I said, we expect fee growth to be suppressed versus our previous estimate by lower client activity. So fee and commission income should still rise, but at a low single-digit pace year-on-year versus a high teens percentage growth previously expected. Now, this mid-single-digit growth, of course, includes the full phase-in of Grivalia investment property income compared to last year. Without that, we should expect on a like-to-like basis, we should expect a low single-digit decline, both in Greece and international. More specifically, we expect lending and capital market fees to be mostly at par with the previous year, or in some cases, some subcategories slightly higher, and almost all the other categories, i.e. bank assurance and funds under management, network, acquiring, issuing, to be down. So this translates to, excluding Grivalia investment property income, a low single-digit decline, and including the phase-in of investment property income, a mid-single-digit growth. Now, going to net interest income, as I said, is now expected to decline by a low single-digit rate in 2020 versus a mid-single-digit decline previously, helped by stronger loan growth, higher volumes, higher bonds income due to volume, reduced funding costs on deposits and repos, and higher TLTRO utilization. Now, on your specific question regarding the loans provided under the government guarantee scheme, as state guaranteed, at least 80%, these loans are zero risk weights and ECB eligible for liquidity purposes. Now, due to the zero risk weight, we have to pass part of this benefit to the customer. So on a like-to-like basis, let's assume two clients with a similar credit solvency level, the spread should be lower in case of a loan with a government guarantee scheme. But of course, obviously, the absolute spread depends on the credit worthiness analysis of its specific customer.
Thank you. If I may just follow up on the formation, could you give us an indication on what you've seen in terms of NPE formation in the second quarter? Have you seen anything, or is it still flat in May because there are no auctions, etc.?
Angeliki, based on what we have seen so far, we expect a flattish NPE formation for the second quarter.
Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Abad Hossa with Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Okay, thank you for the presentation. Good afternoon, everyone. I have two quick questions. The first one is that you are increasing. We're looking at your guidance actually for cost of risk this year, 140 to 160. This is actually an add-on of between 50 and 70 bps versus the previous. Guidance. So the first question is whether we should expect the same add-on for next year. So this is actually a guidance for 2 years, or this is just a guidance for 2020. And if this is not guidance for 2021, what should we expect for 2021? The second question is, so you assume here a net GDP contraction over a two-year period of 2.5%. This obviously leads actually to this 50 to 70 add-on. So if in the case that the net GDP contraction was twice as large, let's assume actually 5%, should we then incorporate our numbers actually an add-on twice as large as well, between 100 and 140 bps? Thank you very much.
On the first part of your question, I think it would be too early to provide any sort of guidance for cost of risk in 2021. We should see how things evolve over the next couple of quarters before we make an assessment for 2021. Now, on the second part of your question, because the line was not that great, are you kind enough to repeat your question, please?
Yes, of course. So you, for the calculation of your guidance, so you are using, or you are assuming actually a net GDP contraction of 2.5% over 2020-2021. My question was that in the case that, for example, we had a contraction which was larger, let's assume twice as large, so this would be a net negative contraction of around 5% over the next 2 years, whether we should also assume an add-on twice as large. Which would be actually between 100 and 140 bps. And if not, what would be the sensitivity that we should have in mind?
Okay, now it's clear. Roughly, for every 1% in terms of additional contraction, the effect should be about 10 to 20 basis points in terms of cost of risk.
Mr. Rabat, have you finished with your questions?
Yes, thank you.
The next question is from the line of Boulouris Alexandros with Wood & Co. Please go ahead.
Yes, hello. Just a quick question. I'm not sure if you covered it in the presentation before, but from this guidance of 140 to 160 bps cost of risk, could you elaborate how much is the IFRS 9 change of macroeconomic assumptions that... thank you.
The estimate is based on our IFRS models, taking into account the macro scenario that we have already described.
So this, okay, I see. Thank you.
The next question is a follow-up question from the line of Bayraktari Aghiligi with Autonomous Research. Please go ahead.
Hi. Just one follow-up on TLTRO, please. Can you confirm that the 7.3 billion is going to be the maximum amount you can draw? And then would you consider putting on carry trades, investing part of that liquidity into Greek government bonds to have a pickup in yield on your NII? Or is that included in your the number that you provided before of 130 million, which, if I understood correctly, the 130 million is, we should divide that by three, right? Because it applies to 3 years. So if you could also confirm that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Angeliki. The picture on TLTRO is as follows. The current LTRO is 5.4 billion at a rate currently at minus 0.5%. And the current TLTRO of 1.9 billion currently at zero. LTRO will be rolled over to TLTRO 3 borrowing in June. So in total, we are going to reach a level of approximately 8 billion euro at minus 100 base points rates for 1 year, so between June 20 and June 2021. Subject to no loan decrease in this perimeter excluding mortgage amortizations during the period end of January 2020, end of March 2021. And after the year that, as I said, expires in June 2021, we come back to minus 50 basis points again. So the maximum take is expected at approximately 8 billion euro, and the expected total benefit until 2022, as I said, we expect to be at the area of 130 million euro, not evenly distributed. Close to 50% is expected to be in 2021, regarding the other 50%, more or less evenly allocated to 2020 and 2022. So the major part will be in 2021. So it's not divided by three.
Yeah, understood. Thank you very much for the clarification.
The next question is from the line of Sevim Mehmet with JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much for the presentation. Just a quick follow-up on the Cairo transaction, please. Can you share with us any more details on the distribution of the mezzanine and junior notes to shareholders? For example, what will happen between the closing of the deal and the first half of June to the third quarter 20 that you are guiding? Do you have also any closer date for now that you can share with us? And given this is treated as a dividend in kind, is there anything that could prevent this from happening given the regulatory restrictions, etc.? Thanks very much.
What we are going to distribute is 75% of mezzanine of all Cairo SPVs and 50% of junior. Now, the next steps are as follows. Before that, not to forget, we have received the SSM approval on the distribution, so we don't expect any regulatory approval on that. It's just a procedural governance issue related to the bank's processes. So next step on mid-June, our board will resolve on the transfer of Cairo mezzanine and junior notes to the Cypriot SPV. The annual general assembly that will take place in mid-July, if I remember correctly, on 17th of July, will resolve upon the distribution of Cairo of these SPV shares to the shareholders. There is a lapse period of 40 days. So by end of August or early September, the shareholders will be credited with the shares of the new SPV. This is the timeline so far. And again, we don't expect any external approval in order to proceed on that. It's a matter of internal bodies approval.
Great. Thanks so much, Haris.
The next question is from the line of Manolopoulos Konstantinos with Optima Bank. Please go ahead.
Yes, hello. Thanks for the presentation and the results. Well done and congratulations. Actually, I have a question on the payment moratoria schemes on pages 8 and 9, where you present the how many customers have opted in into these schemes. So in my eyes, at least, it's weird and definitely very positive the fact that only 22% of eligible clients have opted in on the household products and slightly similar levels in corporate and significantly higher on small business loans. So the question is, how come rates are so low? I mean, one would expect that given the moratoria, more people would have opted in rather than not opt in. So what's your understanding on that? I mean, is it because the whole process is slow and more applications should follow in the coming weeks and months? Or is it because clients await for the numerous government initiatives, the ones, for instance, that you referred, or the new liquidity schemes, etc.? Or is it indeed a completely improved payment behavior from all parts, i.e. Households and corporates?
Okay, that's a very good question. And actually, we raised this question with ourselves because our initial expectation was that a higher percentage of customers would opt in for this moratoria. Now, obviously, the process is not over. We keep calling customers and the numbers may increase over time. But one explanation for the relatively low opt-in rate is that these customers are customers who have remained current throughout the 10-year crisis that we had in Greece. Because, as you know, we offer this moratoria only to current customers. So these people have been tested under very severe conditions during the last 4, 5, 6 years. They remain performing. Therefore, they have a payment culture which is quite strong. And this may be an explanation why some of them have decided to continue with the current payment schedule and not seek any moratoria.
Okay, so it's probably a change in behavior rather than anything else. That's very good.
Ladies and gentlemen, there are no further questions at this time. I will now turn the conference over to Mr. Karavias for any closing comments. Thank you.
Thank you. Let me thank you all for participating in this call for our first quarter results. Let me also thank you for your questions. They have been very helpful to elaborate some of the issues related with our results. We will be available for any follow-up call. during the next several weeks. Thank you. Have a nice weekend.